Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News Team.
So welcome back, dear listeners. Second episode of 2021, and I have to say things are moving not that slowly in the EU bubble. We had quite an interesting week in the EU agri-food world. On Tuesday, there was this big event organized by the Commission to kick off the revision of the EU's directive on sustainable use of pesticides. So the Commission announced that they want to finish both the evaluation and the impact assessment by the end of the year. It was already announced, actually. And then the idea is to unveil the new legislative proposal in the first quarter of 2022. There's still time, but since it's one of the most important portion of the farm-to-fork strategy, so the part of the Green Deal that actually deals with the food systems. So again, it's good to keep pace with the developments on the topic. And also this week, the public consultation on the matter has been started. And it will be closed in April the 12th. There were also some technical meetings for the Common Agricultural Policy, so the EU's farming subsidies program. We are in the as you probably already know, we are at the trilogue stage. So the two lawmakers, the European Parliament and the European Council, are negotiating in order to reach a common position. We actually attended a very interesting press conference with the two negotiators on the Parliament side, Peter Jahr and Ulrike Müller. So the first thing that I'd like to highlight is on the timing. They basically say that if they continue to have one trilogue per month, as they had so far, they believe that in April or May they could find the final agreement with the council. So even
pretty interesting.
It's interesting, and even the current Portuguese presidency have the same objective. They want to close the gap by spring. I mean, these are the expectations. So when it comes to reality, they also say that they're still talking about how financing the cap, so the way to distribute the money, and also the structure of governance. Plus, there's still the thorny issue of the architecture, so how to deliver the greening of the European agriculture through the Common Agricultural Policy Programme.
Yeah, there's definitely a number of outstanding issues.
Yeah, I mean, what I could understand is that it's not about the number of trilogues, because the trilogues are, of course, the negotiations between the lawmakers. Because there are also technical meetings in which they could exchange views, and there's no limit to the technical meeting that they could have. It's basically finding a common ground. I wouldn't focus that much on how many trilogues are needed to reach an agreement. But and this is an advice for who's checking the development of the talks. I would check on how many outstanding issues are settled and how fast. So, for instance, I think that the green architecture could take a bit longer because of the public opinion pressure, but also because positions are still far. And when you can feel positive progress in these outstanding issues like green architectures, it means that we are closer to the end. So you have to follow religiously our updates on your active website from now
Very
on.
Smart. Top tip to the listeners is follow your
active. Of course. I mean, it's the only way to stay up to date. It's useless if you now circle on your calendar the Agrifish Council of May just because Ulrike Müller or the Portuguese minister expect a deal before summer. So.
You heard it here first, folks. Follow Euractiv, listen to the podcast. Top tips.
But another interesting issue is purely technical. Some of you have probably seen a tweet that I published on Thursday on this.
You should probably give the warning that you gave on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And which was?
No. I mean, it's basically very nerd stuff. EU nerd stuff.
Top level nerd.
Yeah, EU top level. Stuff. I mean, those who have had some experience in the trilogue negotiations, so a bunch of people, already knows that there's this document, no? The four column. It is fondly called four column because it's a table with four columns, of Whoa. Course.
Wow, mind blowing.
And all the negotiating positions of the negotiators are there. So you have in the first column the Commission's proposal, in the second column, the way the Parliament amended the proposal, so the Parliament's mandate, and on the third column, the Council's general approach, and on the last column, the fourth column, you have the attempts by the rotating presidency to reach a compromise. So basically, suggestions from the presidency. So it turned out that for these negotiations on CAP, on the reform of CAP, there's an additional column. Peter Jahr spoke about, Peter Jahr is one of the negotiators on the parliament side. He said that there's a five column document, which is, again, for people who have worked in the EU institutions, it's like a unicorn. It's like a shamrock, no? It's something, you know, unusual at least.
Up there with the unicorns and shamrocks.
Indeed. The EU shamrock.
Quite an accolade.
And why it is? Because the Commission also listed some suggestions to interpret the original proposal in the light of the farm to fork strategy, so the EU's food policy, the part of the Green Deal, no? Which is fair. I mean, things have radically changed since the presentation of the CAP proposal in 2018, because, of course, Green Deal was unveiled, and in the meantime, we're talking about a huge revolution, but it's a bit controversial at the same time because we're talking about suggestions that the Commission is proposing at the table. I mean, Commission has always had a strong influence on the process, on the talks between the Council and the Parliament. This way, it is like kind of amending their own proposal. So it put the Commission ideally on the same footing of the co-legislators, and the lawmakers in the EU system are the Parliament and the Council. The Commission has a different role, which is basically the initiative, the power of initiative. Indeed, I asked about this interference, and one of the European Parliament negotiators, the German Peter Jahr, said that it is unusual, but honest because, again, we're facing these new conditions, new requirements. But he also said that it's a bit annoying. So he said, what makes me angry is that the Commission don't think we are able to deal with it. So, I mean, he said, we are part of the society as well. We know what's happening. So the Commission doesn't need to recall how important are to match the CAP with the farm to fork goals, with the Green Deal objective.
You found it a bit condescending or something.
Or I'd say it's like, you know, patronizing, no?
Yeah, okay.
Again, it's understandable because we're talking about the top priority of the Commission, of this Commission at least. Top priority in the von der Leyen mandate. So, again, understandable, but...
Controversial, a little bit controversial.
I mean, controversial in the good terms. I mean, not saying that it's unlawful, because again, the Commission it's basically the main task of the Commission to provide some kind of expertise, because they have technical experts, they have lawyers, they have experts in EU law. Hmm. So in one way or another, they have an influence on the process, even if they're not part. But this is a different layer of influence. I mean, it's like, again, as I said, being on the same negotiating table in the sense that they can also amend their own proposal. Depends on the very difficult timing, let's say, of the GAP proposal, which was presented before the end of the past the commission's mandate. So, and again, in the meantime, there was the farm to fork, so it's understandable, but a bit controversial.
And something else, an interesting development that happened this week, happened in the Czech Republic, where the country's on its way to introduce a pretty controversial protectionist food law, even though there are warnings this could be in violation of the EU's free movement of goods. And so this is kind of interesting because I remember back at the beginning of, when kind of everything went a bit crazy last year and the start of the first lockdown, there were all these warnings about kind of member states turning to protectionist measures, especially in the agri-food sector, and, you know, promoting national agri-food products, discouraging imported products. And at the time, the European Commission expressed concern about this and about the free movement of goods and services in the internal market, saying that the internal market is our strongest asset in ensuring supplies across the EU, and basically warned against this kind of shift towards protectionism in the agri-food sector. But now this week, the lower house of the Czech Parliament actually passed an amendment to the food law, under which basically it would oblige stores that are larger than 400 square meters, to sell a mandatory minimum share of food products made in the Czech Republic. And that quota would be around 55% next year, but the aim is to actually grow that up to 73% in 2028. So it's pretty, pretty considerable. And before the vote, the agricultural minister, Miroslav Toman, he actually called on MPs to be a little bit nationalistic when it comes to Czech foodstuff, which is a pretty interesting statement. And so in reaction to the news, well, the European Commission, they said they were reluctant to comment on something as it hasn't actually passed into law yet. It's just the early stages of it. They were reluctant to kind of comment on speculation. But they again reiterated the importance of free movement of goods and services in the internal market, saying it was the EU's best tool for ensuring a recovery for all after COVID. They also said that local restrictions of whatever kind are counterproductive, and that it's the utmost importance that national emergency measures are not at the expense of the fundamental principles and values set out in the treaties. But although they didn't want to speculate at this stage, another EU source told us that if adopted, these measures would clearly create privileged marketing conditions for Czech food products, so discriminating against other EU food producers and going against the free movement of goods principle. So there was a pretty mixed reaction in the Czech Republic about this. So we had the Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, who said that he did not initiate the proposal and actually does not support it. He called it a useless political gesture. But there was also some support for the amendment. And so this will be definitely something to watch in the coming weeks and months, how this develops. This week, our guest on the podcast is Green MEP Eleonora Evi, and we spoke to her a bit about her views on gene editing and the news that the European Parliament passed the 51st objection to the authorization of GM crops in December. And here's what she had to say on the matter.
So we are here today with Eleonora Evi, who's an Italian MEP for the Greens. Thanks for joining us, Eleonora.
Hello, thank you very much for inviting me.
So you actually joined the Greens quite recently, in December, if I'm not wrong. So just to break the ice, how these first weeks in the new group have been?
Well, simply wonderful and fantastic, I have to say. Very happy to have joined the Green EFA group. And it's so good that inside the group, we work in a very good cooperative way. It's very transparent and very welcoming. So it's really a nice feeling being there.
I'm glad to hear that you're settling in well. And so we invited you here today to talk about a number of things, and one of them was a development that happened back in December. So in December, the EU Parliament voted through its 51st objection to GM crop authorisations, giving a pretty kind of clear signal from the Parliament about where it stands on this technology. But I wanted to hear from you a little bit about how you think the Parliament's position compares with that of the Commission's, and how you whether you think kind of this is being taken into account by the Commission.
It is a long story, this one of objecting GMOs authorization by the Parliament, because the European Commission, it's years that it continues to authorize new GMOs or re-authorize GMOs on the EU market, despite the opposition by the European Parliament. And this is very bad, and it poses a number of questions, not only in regards the number of reasons that the Parliament underlines in each and every resolution, but also it poses a question of democracy in the end, if it is acceptable that the European Commission, even though the legal framework that it's always claimed to be followed by the European Commission itself, it is correct and acceptable to continue to authorize such GMOs in Europe. And this is something that has to be dealt with attention, and something that sometimes is not very much in the interest of people, or at least doesn't really reach out people and citizens that have shown it many times. There are a lot of Eurobarometers on that, saying that European citizens are against GMOs in Europe. So it is important that the European Commission really changes its behavior and start listening not only the Parliament, but European citizens on these GMOs.
You spoke a bit about the kind of past, authorizations from the Commission of this biotechnology. And the Commission says that it's looking to press ahead with something they call a new approach to GM crops. What is your take on that?
That's a wonderful signal. Until I won't see written on paper, I won't believe it. But it's so important now that we will start making consideration on sustainability, so on the effects that GMOs crops have on the environment, for example, when we talk about third countries where the majority of GMOs plants and crops comes from, there are main driver of deforestation, where we as Europeans, for our behaviors and our consumes, are responsible of 10% of deforestation globally, then it poses really a question of, is it sustainable? Shouldn't we stop destruction of nature across the globe and start stopping these import of GMOs crop and change the way we do our agriculture? So this is an important signal by the European Commission that comes after these many years of objections by the European Parliament, where an increasing number of MEPs have started to oppose, so to vote in favor of these objections. And this is another important signal I would also underline. And another aspect, which is important as well, which is the increased number of member states no more supporting this authorization of GMOs in Europe. So really, the European Commission is working on its own, and this is something that has to be changed.
And you also mentioned this revision, let's say, of the broader EU policy when it comes to trade. And there's this rethinking of the EU trade policy to take into account, as you said, the new commitment to, for instance, sustainable food system when it comes to agriculture. So what could be the contribution from the European Parliament side on bettering the EU trade policy?
This is a huge area of work, and luckily from the European Parliament, positive signals are coming, in particular on legislative initiative. There has been this INL report on deforestation and establishing a legal framework to halt deforestation across the globe, and in particular having products imported in the EU that are not causing this deforestation elsewhere. And this is something very important, as we said, and as we have seen also in the European Green Deal and in the Farm to Fork, in the biodiversity strategy. These are the exactly the major areas of intervention where European Union has to take a strong stance, where, by the way, citizens are more and more aware of these impacts and the consequences of their own behavior and consumptions. So I expect not only from the Parliament that has already made some strong stances on these, I expect now from the European Commission legislative proposal to regulate this and to make sure that each and every product that comes and are imported in Europe are not causing deforestation around the globe.
Moving to the topic of the new plant breeding techniques that the Greens group called new GMOs. In Italy, you're coming from Italy, there's a particular situation because at the EU level, we are still in a very uncertain, let's say, uncertain moment because everything has stopped at the EU Court of Justice ruling that equates the new plant breeding technique or gene editing to basically the legislation on GM. There's something moving in Italy, for instance, in the agriculture committees of both the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate. They're trying to introduce the production and marketing of varieties obtained by genetic recombination. Could you tell us a bit more on this?
Indeed, despite Italy has been one of those countries always opposing GMOs, strongly opposing GMOs, where no cultivation, for example, are present in Italy, but also opposing the authorization of new GMOs. Now something is unfortunately changing, and these new breeding techniques, so these new GMOs that have been, as you said, defined by the European Court of Justice to be regulated under the same regulatory framework that today is in place for regular GMOs, and this should be the line to follow, so the way to proceed. Despite this, there has been attempt to open doors to these new techniques in the past weeks. Luckily, a new vote recently performed in the chamber of the deputies chamber have now made a stop on this attempt, so we might see a stop on this attempt to opening doors to these new genome editing techniques, where I have to say it's really important that we follow what the European Court of Justice sentence declared, as this should really be the way forward and the way to continue regulating GMOs. And there will be, not only in Italy, but also at European level, many attempts to reverse this sentence and to push the European Commission, which has been asked by the Council, so the member states, to provide a study on these new breeding techniques and these new GMOs, which is foreseen to be released in the next spring. I really hope that the Parliament will stay strong and defend the sentence of the European Court of Justice, but I expect strong fights on the farm to fork dossier, for example, which is about to come in the ENVI committee to be voted. So we will see, and I really hope that we don't have to, and I don't want to say that no innovation has to be envisaged in the agricultural sector. Right, the contrary. Of course, there are innovative practices that can be envisaged, but if we are talking about genome editing and if we are talking about behaving like God, this is really not the case. This is really not the way we should follow.
And actually, the top news of the week was the inauguration of the Joe Biden administration in the US, which has some kind of, let's say, agri-food flavor. Why, Natasha?
Well, there's been this kind of long-standing issue between the US and the EU to do with tariffs. That have really affected agricultural products. And basically, for a bit of background, this came after the World Trade Organization, the WTO, gave the US the green light to levy tariffs on EU exports in retaliation for some earlier what they considered excessive EU subsidies given to the aircraft maker. So in October 2019, the US imposed these retaliatory duties that affect EU exports worth $7.5 billion, and the thing is that a lot of these tariffs were levied on agricultural products such as French wine, Italian cheese, Spanish olive oil. So obviously this has had a huge impact on the agri-food sector. And the story continues. The EU then retaliated against the retaliation by raising tariffs against the US. And then the US decided just before the end of 2020 to impose additional tariffs on EU agri-food products, targeting mainly French and German non-sparkling wines and spirits. So it's this long story of, you know, retaliation for various things that all started with this. This issue over Airbus and Boeing in this aeronautical area that wasn't really to do with agri-food.
And of course, in Brussels, they're thinking of a new beginning. Now there's a new president, no?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, indeed. So we're kind of seizing on this momentum. Norbert Linz, who's the chair of the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee, sent a letter this week to the EU's Executive Vice President, Valdis Dombrovskis, basically calling on the European Commission to intervene in this dispute and the sanctions stemming from it, saying that they're causing severe damage to numerous European agricultural sectors, expressing their concern and basically, you know, asking to kind of seize this moment, this opportunity that has opened up with the incoming Biden administration, and to try and de-escalate the tensions. And he said that this is crucial to establish a truce as soon as possible, because not doing this would further jeopardize our agricultural producers and traders.
And it's actually not the first time that the European Parliament is trying to, you know, entering this and trying to settle this dispute their own way. For instance, there was they voted in favor of a smaller trade deal between the EU and the US. Again, as a olive branch, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this lobster deal. So basically, the EU decided to remove tariffs on US lobsters.
So long, and thanks for all the
pardon the reference. It was a welcome gift to Joe Biden, also because the U.S. lobster sector is still suffering from the Chinese tariffs. I know we are in the middle of a huge trade war at the global stage. So, and at the same time, they're suffering the effects of the CETA, the Canada-EU trade deal, that are making the Canadian lobster more convenient for Europeans. So again, you know, there's some work to be done in order to bettering the situation, the transatlantic relationship after 4 long years. As von der Leyen,
it's a long tail.
Yeah, I mean, it's what President von der Leyen tweeted. So basically, we had 4 long years, and we're now trying to restart the transatlantic relationships, with this again first olive branches that are coming from the European Parliament.
And lastly, Gerardo, what does Ajiz say when he looks in the mirror?
This is like the whole week that she's saying, "Ah, let's do the halloumi joke on the podcast."
Gerardo, you just ruined the joke.
But everyone knows this joke, so.
I know, and it doesn't get any less funny.
No, I don't know. What does he say?
No, you ruined it. It's gone now. The moment's gone. Halloumi. And what he says, "Hello, me." We're talking about halloumi this week.
Why are we talking about halloumi?
Because the European Court of Justice has dismissed the claim of a Cypriot producers organization who basically challenged the trademark validation of a Bulgarian halloumi sounding products, who argued that it could deceive consumers.
Indeed, there's this Bulgarian company that basically filed this application for registration of the sign BBQ Loomi. It sounds like a loomy. But I mean, it involves not only the dairy products, again, a loomy-like products, but also meat extracts, cheese-flavored products, and also the catering services. So it's like a brand, no? For many products. So the Association of Producers that owns the EU collective trademark Halloumi opposed registration and brought the European Union Intellectual Property Office before the EU court, saying that, as Natasha said before, BBQ Loomi would sound like the halloumi cheese, no? But it's not like this for the European Court of Justice, because they say that there is no likelihood of confusion for the relevant public between the collective mark halloumi that indicates only the product, the halloumi cheese, and it is reserved for the members of this association, and this sign BBQ Loomi, which again serves to designate the entire line of products of the Bulgarian company. It's interesting because at the same time, it says a lot on the different level of protection that the simple EU trademark grant to product. I mean, we're talking about the EU trademark is a great tool when it comes to intellectual property, but there's something missing in this story, and is the so-called PDO, so the protected designation of origin, which is quality scheme given by the Commission to certain products that are closely linked to a certain region of Europe. For instance, Parma ham got the PDO, and it means that only the products produced in that particular part of Italy could be labeled as Parma ham. So we asked the Commission if the PDO grant, you know, a higher level of protection rather than EU trademark. Actually, the answer is yes, of course. Why we ask this? Because, you know, in July 2014, so 6 years ago, Cyprus already applied to secure the PDO status for the Alumi cheese, but the process has been stalled since then due to, it's funny to say that, but its geopolitical implications, because when they sent the application, they also included the term Helim, sorry for our Turkish listeners, so the Turkish name for Alumi, thereby covering the whole island, the production in the whole island, while the Turkish Cypriot community is calling for a separate production control mechanism, again controlled by the Turkish Chamber of Commerce. So again, the case is super complicated because the Alumi cheese is basically lack of the highest protection, which is the PDO, the product designation of origin. Again, it's another, you know, the EU court is dealing another blow, let's say, to Cyprus. But the main issue, the original sin, let's say, of this entire trademark rift is the lack of recognition of Alumi cheese among other products that have the protection by the EU.
My joke also lacks recognition, I would say.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, I'd say rightfully. It was unlow me.
Oh, God.
It's actually yours.
You said my joke was bad.
Yeah. This week, the AgriFood podcast is produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foot, with the technical support of Evi Chiori.
This podcast is also available on all major podcast streaming platforms. That includes Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. I'm Natasha Foote. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
This podcast is part of Euractiv's project Beyond Agriculture, funded by the IMCAP program of the European Union. The content of this podcast represents the views of the author only and is his, her sole responsibility. The European Commission does not accept any responsibility for use that may be made of the information it contains.